Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the CSW Free to Believe podcast. My name is Sam Jackson Reed, and I'm your host today for this one-off episode interrupting our series on North Korea to talk specifically and intentionally about what is happening in Nigeria. I'm joined by Dr. Kataza Gonway and Reverend Yanusa. Kataza, would you like to just introduce yourself briefly? Supporters may have heard, will definitely have heard you before, but why don't you let us know who you are and how you're connected to Nigeria?
Sure. My name is Dr. Kataza Gonway, as you heard, and I am head of advocacy, and also I head the Africa Middle East team at CSW, and that's my connection with Nigeria. I've been working on it for over 20 years. And I think that's my introduction.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Reverend Yanusa, you head our work, you head CSW Nigeria. Why don't you say a few words of introduction as well?
Oh, all right. My name is Reverend Yanusa Madu. I'm the CEO founder of CSW Nigeria. And I've been working on Nigeria and some part of Africa alongside with Dr. Kataza for 18 years now, and still counting.
Well, thank you very much both for joining me. For those who may not know, Nigeria has been in the news recently. Kataza, feel free to correct me on this, but partly because of a viral moment, at least from my experience, the viral moment of a comedian in the US sort of talking about it. But why are we talking about Nigeria specifically right now? Why would we need to jump on and have this sort of conversation? Why don't you let our supporters, our listeners know?
Sure. Well, I'd like to begin by saying that we've been talking at CSW about Nigeria for many years, but it has suddenly become a very prominent issue internationally. And it seems to have been kicked off for many people by an interview with Bill Maher, the American comedian you mentioned, where he compared the genocide, which has been determined by the UN to have been occurring in Gaza, to Nigeria, which he termed a genocide against Christians. And that began a huge conversation. At the same time, it appears, Senator Ted Cruz had introduced a bill about, again, the attacks on Christians in Nigeria, which aims to penalize the government for not assisting and also penalize those who kill people for blasphemy. And more, I'm informed. I still haven't seen the text. It hasn't been put to the public. But this is the broad brushstrokes of this. And this is all coming at the same time as the US is considering countries that is going to be putting on their list of countries of particular concern. So Nigeria is being sort of suggested as a country that should have been there or should be redesignated, because they were actually there briefly and were taken out by the previous US administration. So all of this is coming at the same time, and the Nigerian government is also speaking out to prevent this from happening and to challenge the narrative that is coming out about a Christian genocide. And others are speaking, particularly Christians from northern Nigeria and other constituencies, are actually saying, actually, we are being killed in a massive way. So that is why suddenly Nigeria is of such prominence, because there's this international discussion about what's going on there and whether more action should be taken, particularly in the US, but also internationally, to assist Christians in Nigeria.
A really important point that you've just made at the beginning there is, and actually in both of your introductions, there's been work happening and conversation and talking about things happening in Nigeria for decades. This actually isn't new, is it? It's actually something that has been ongoing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of important to mention, isn't it? That actually there is history to this. There's history to what is going on. It's not a sudden kind of case that's sort of arisen in the last year or so. It's actually there's some things that have been going on for a very, very long time.
Yes, and they even predate when CSW, or when I started working at CSW or working on Nigeria. I mean, these issues predate all of that, and I'm sure my colleague can go into it with much greater detail, but the situation is not new. And we have been crying out for a long time for international action. But there's been resistance at international level because a narrative that prevailed amongst the decision makers and really emanated from, I would say, the British Foreign Office, which embraced this narrative the most, is that everything that happens in Nigeria has no religious connotations, but is far more heard of violence, et cetera, et cetera. But they haven't addressed the historical persecution, almost something that amounts to religious persecution. I will talk about terms later, that has been ongoing for decades in Nigeria.
Yeah, I think that Dr. Kataza have really summarized the reason why Nigeria is on the front burner right now. Additionally, I think the desperation of the government of the day to deny what has been happening, something that predates this government and several others in recent times, is also, making people to begin to find out what really is in this, that the government is very desperate. Delegations are being sent from National Assembly, from the state from the federal executive to Washington in order to debunk the fact of, what people term as a systemic genocide, or the mass killing, if you like. So people are beginning to ask, why is the government so desperate in trying to see that this does not happen? And I would think that this is one of the things that have really drawn interest internationally and nationally. And it's not for the love of the country, as it were, but it's for the love of the elites in the country, who know very well that if the country is designated as a country of particular concern, this will affect them more. Visa ban and all of those, their international businesses might be affected. So they are trying to drum up support, even from people who might be very ignorant of what the CPC stands for, so that the whole country can come together. Religious leaders and others can begin to say, no, we don't want to be designated as CPC. But the real issue is not being addressed. And it's interesting also to hear the argument from the government side. It's not only Christians that are being killed. Even non-Christians are also being killed. I thought that's irresponsible for any government to say, well, yes, we know there are killings, but it's not one-sided. I mean, if there are killings of whether Christians, Muslims, or humanists, isn't it the responsibility of government to prevent it? So their argument does not stand, and this is making people to begin to take interest in what is happening. So that's why it seems as if Nigeria is being discussed now internationally, but no, it's been there for so long, as Dr. Kataza earlier stated.
Thank you. Yeah, so just dropping back just a moment, I think for the benefit of our listeners, could we just briefly unpack what are the consequences of being named a country of particular concern? What might a nation be worried about if that gets put upon them by the US?
Well, they can be worried about possible visa bans and travel bans on identified perpetrators or facilitators or even sponsors of this violence, or even those who are not taking action to limit, to effectively control it. There's also, it opens the way to other penalties, and this would include Magnitsky sanctions and other US sanctions. So it's all of that that, as Yunusa mentioned earlier, the visa bans, and they all have great interests in the US. A lot of them have homes in the US. And that is the kind of thing that they worry they will lose. But there's nothing to be worried about if you're not part of the problem, if you're not part of the issue, or you're not perpetrating the issue. So some people have tried to even speak in terms of oh, it'll stop the army from getting arms and all of this kind of thing. All of that is not going to happen. It's going to be identifying individuals who have been part and parcel of the violations, and they're the ones who will be targeted, whether financially or through, you know, their inability to travel as freely as they would want to. Those are the key things, really. And for us, the key thing about CPC designation is that there will be an investigation into the finances behind the violence, because the perpetrators have access to a lot of money, clearly, from the weaponry that they use. I mean, you're seeing people with, you know, is it rocket launchers, the ones they put on their shoulders and things like that. There is a lot of money behind this. And if we can trace the money and then address it, that will help the government itself to address the violence. So they're panicking, but there's no need to panic if you're not part of the problem.
Yeah. So, yeah, very true, Dr. Kataza. I also think that, I mean, before now, we have been designated place as a country of particular concern sometimes ago. I think that was during Trump's first tenure. And then we were removed by the administration of Joe Biden. At that time, there was nothing about, you know, our country being denied access to weapons to fight terrorism. But I think that while the government is panicking, is the fact that the Cruz it's backing up that with a legislation. So they are afraid that if that is passed, then what Kataza just spoke about concerning the U.S. laws will affect the individual. So this really, it's not about being patriotic. It's about protecting individuals who needed the protection and to continue to have their field day while their country born.
Okay, yeah, thank you. So I suppose, again, trying to draw people into what is a highly complex and ultimately nuanced situation, there's obviously lots of history and context. Could we maybe just take a moment to speak to, you know, maybe dig into a bit more what is going on? Who are these perpetrators? How is this being carried out? How long, you know, what is the history and the context here that we're talking about, that now so many people internationally are suddenly becoming kind of, they're entering into, you know, something that actually has a much deeper root to it, and maybe aren't going to understand what is behind it and need to understand what's going on.
Okay, so again, referring to what Dr. Kataza said earlier on, that CSW have been speaking about this for a very long time. But then the situation about Christian persecution in Nigeria predates even Nigerians' independence. We've had independence this month. We are 65 years as independent country. But what we are talking about predates even independence. At the time where people like Usman Danfodio fought jihad and went to places where they converted people from, some from the animistic religion or even Christian religion to Islam, and tried to colonize them by making them to forsake their dialects, to be able to speak the Hausa dialect so that they can be uniform in the Islamic practice. At that time, we saw that there was a form of discrimination and marginalization of Christian minorities, especially in the north. This went on for a very long time, and this could manifest in several ways, like lack of employment for Christians, lack of good courses in schools, lack of providing or giving permits to build places of worship just because they are Christians, or even access to social amenities in their community. Now, this
Sorry to interrupt, Reverend Yusuf, but what kind of time frame are we talking about in this moment? What kind of years, what kind of dates are we talking about?
Yeah, when I said this predates independence, we are talking about something that is beyond 65 years ago or 80 years ago up until this time, you know. Yes. Then at independence, this continued with Sadona, who became the Prime Minister of the North. You know, he was actually in charge. And this continued, the discrimination and marginalization of Christians continued even during his time. Then if you fast track to the 80s, the 1980s, you begin to find out that it graduated from just this systematic and systemic marginalization and discrimination of Christians to what I will call orchestrated violence, where Christians were now being physically attacked. Unprovoked attacks were happening in many places, especially in Kaduna State, to the point that Kaduna State earned the name the boiling point of the North. You know, people usually, it will begin in Kaduna State and spread to other parts of the North. And it could be stimulated by just political issues, which will now be given religious coloration. For instance, I remember one time in Plateau, someone won a local government chairmanship. Because he's a Christian, they went straight to burn churches and to attack Christians. Churches are not political offices. I also remember there was this big one that happened during the Danish cartoon when someone drew the cartoon of Muhammad and Muslims got infuriated in Nigeria and they attacked Christians and the church who do not even have an idea who the guy who did to us. There was the Miss World context in Nigeria where girls were brought in order to contest for who will be Miss World. Nigeria was given the hosting right. I agree that the Muslims have a right to protest, but then they must protest in the confines of the law. So instead of protesting under the confines of the law, they went out on rampage on Christians, began to burn Christian properties, kill Christians. Churches were being attacked. Christian businesses were being attacked. People were being killed. So that was what metamorphosed into terrorism in recent times, when the first people who began terrorism in Nigeria, who began Boko Haram, the terrorist group called Boko Haram, were very clear. They were very clear about their mission, about their target. They wanted to have an Islamic state, and so everybody must become a Muslim. And who was their stumbling block? Of course, the Christians and the law enforcement agents. So that explains why, at the very initial, when this started, they began to attack churches, bomb churches. People couldn't go to church on Sunday without protection. And even sometimes with the protection, doesn't help when it got to the height. Police stations were being attacked, overpowered by, these terrorist groups. So this terrorism is what, again, has dovetailed into banditry and kidnapping and all of those criminal activities. So people try to separate banditry and kidnapping from terrorism. No, because what we do understand and know is that they kidnap and ask for ransom so that they can continue to sponsor their activities. So it's one and the same group of people. While some are getting money from the locals, having kidnapped people and taking ransom, the terrorists, the money is used to to finance some of the terrorist activities in Nigeria. So in a nutshell, this is what the history has been, and the target has been Christians and those who started the Never Miss World. In fact, they killed pastors. I remember my classmate, Reverend Oji, who was among the first people they captured in Maiduguri, and all they asked them to do so that they can be free is to denounce Christ and get their freedom back. He refused to denounce Christ. He was beheaded alongside with others who refused to denounce Christ. And those who were Muslim that were captured along with them were free to go. So this is what we've been dealing with. But again, I must also say here that because of the multifaceted complexity of what is happening and of the country Nigeria, new groups have come up and new issues have come up and added to what is happening. So you have to be able to separate what is happening in other parts of the country to be able to find solution to it. If you go to the Southeast, it is people fighting for their emancipation, for their rights and so on. I do not support what they do in order to fight for their rights, because you cannot fight for your rights by being violent. But again, you cannot call that religiously induced violence or insecurity. So when people give it a blanket name as insecurity, you will not be able to find solution to it. Because if you go to the Northwest, what is happening there is resource control in terms of gold and mining activities that is heightening the insecurity there. But when you come to the Northeast and North Central of Nigeria, clearly it has a religious coloration, and Christians are being killed in their droves.
Yeah, just to agree and to add to what Reverend Yunus has just said, this decades-long system of repression, really, of religious repression, creates an enabling environment from which these terrorist groups have emerged from the 1980s, they said, onwards to now. And to just unpack some of these terrorist groups, you have Boko Haram, which split into, because a group of it felt that the then leader was not discriminating enough when he was letting off bombs. Too many Muslims were being, you know, sort of affected by them. So they split from him because, I mean, the man was clearly crazy, even for, you know, amongst those who he was supporting. And then you had the split, first of all, into Ansaru, which is the Al-Qaeda affiliate. And then later you had ISWAP, which is the Islamic State affiliate. So you have those groups there. And the two new ones that Yunus mentioned, some of the new ones that Yunus mentioned, have emerged during the current administration. These others predated the current administration, but Lakurawa, which is functioning in the Northwest, and Mahmuda, which is functioning in Kwara State, have emerged recently, just in the last year or so, and they are terrorizing people. And then finally, you have the Fulani militia that's functioning in the North Center that is targeting Christian communities for mass killings, for massacre, I mean, horrible massacres, and also for forced displacement. So people are being pushed off of their ancestral land, and then this land is being occupied by Fulani ethnicity, people of Fulani ethnicity, many of whom are coming in from abroad and settling there. So it's a complete takeover and an effort to change the religious demography and even the ethnic demography, because most of these are small tribes that are together form the Christian community of the area. So there in that area, if people are pointing to possible signs of genocide, you can actually identify violence that is taking place with seeming genocidal intent. And the forced displacement also is an atrocity crime in itself, identified by the ICC. So in the center, that is what's going on. Now in the northwest, again, Fulani, I call them militias, but you know, you can call them armed gangs, gangsters, whatever they tried to call them, are actually attacking on the grounds of ethnicity. So the majority of their victims are Hausa Muslims who are settled also, you know, the communities, farming communities, just as in the north center. And they are being abused in the same manner and of being subjected to the same kind of attacks, right down to attacks on houses of worship and the killings of people in there. So those are the different groups that are functioning right now in Nigeria. And then you have the others, as he mentioned, the one in the southeast and others too. But that's the complexity and multifaceted nature of the what comes under insecurity. But it has to be separated out if it's going to be addressed properly, because each area has its own factors that need to be addressed.
Yeah, I was going to, clarify, but you've clarified there quite clearly. There's this sense of a blanket term of insecurity over Nigeria might be used, but then you need to recognize almost this patchwork of, well, you need to dig underneath to recognize the roots and the foundations of why is that insecurity happening. But to kind of try and blanket over is to deny actually the complexity of what's going on. And it mm-hmm. seems like there is these two levels of conversation, isn't there? And I feel like maybe we get into these kind of conversations when we're talking about nations as kind of whole body, whole units. We sort of blanket communicate, this is what's going on, but you need to dig down in to actually understand, well, yes, but this is ethnic and this is religious and this is economic and this is, and that's when you're then hearing the government of Nigeria speak in the way that they're speaking, there seems to be a sense of, there's a diversion of attention to one over the other or that sort of thing, but actually having a perspective of all across all of them is really important.
Yeah, especially if you want to address them, because you can't address a situation that is as you said, primarily about an economic factor or, you know, sort of like self-determination or some kind of better treatment for us as a group, as an ethnic group. You can't address that in the same manner you addressed sheer terrorists who are coming out to kill, steal, and destroy. You know, they have to separate them all out and address, come up with bespoke plans and solutions to each of these factors, and also work in a coordinated way at the same time. So it's a tough job, and it's arisen because of years of neglect. They have allowed the violence that initially, the real violence was in these Christian enclaves by Boko Haram and other terrorist groups. And then later on, you have the Fulani militia coming, and again through Christian enclaves. If they had addressed all of these things immediately, we wouldn't be in the situation that we're in now. Now everybody is in danger from different, you know, for different reasons. But the fact that this violence metastasized to this level is because previous governments did not take the action that was needed. So the Nigerian government now, instead of being defensive, should be looking at this, even the CPC designation, as a source of assistance to deal with the huge mess that has been created, and admittedly, including the two terrorist groups that have arisen under its watch.
And what are either of you seeing in terms of this conversation internationally? Obviously, no nation kind of exists entirely in a vacuum. You know, as you mentioned earlier on, there's Senator Ted Cruz from the US is writing things about it, you know, other nations, all this kind of stuff. So what are you seeing internationally in terms of the conversation around this, in the current moment where it's sort of come to light? What are you seeing at that level? And do you perceive that it is reaching those levels of complexity that you think it requires?
Internationally, as the two of us went on a on an assignment to Geneva and spoke to different stakeholders there, there is a concern for Nigeria, but what can we do to help? You know, what can we do? There's a confusion because of the different narratives. Well, the particular narrative that has kind of like muddied the waters for many, many years. I think people are looking and seeing that this narrative doesn't hold up. But then again, you know, there are those who still embrace it. So they want to help, but they're not quite sure how to go about it and need sort of the clarification that groups like, you know, CSW and others are providing. So there is an awareness of the extreme loss of life in Nigeria, which equates with a war zone, really, or a proper civil war, you know, that had been declared. And yet the silence almost internationally and the lack of action has been glaring. What we're concerned is that Nigeria doesn't become almost a tool in culture wars. There has to be, in every area, a bipartisan recognition that this is an issue that if Nigeria is allowed to fail, it will not just impact Nigeria. It will not just impact Africa. It'll hit the whole world. If Nigeria is allowed to become the equivalent of Raqqa, for example, which is what some of these groups really want to do, to take it over, then you have a very dangerous situation for the entire global community. So there's an awareness and almost a sense of urgency to do something, but it's, you know, getting together and coming up with a plan is where the problem comes in. But in the US, yes, this is happening. It still needs to be bipartisan, I feel, and a recognition by both parties that this is something that has global import. It's not just about using, you know, Christian pressure groups wanting something done about Christians. It's bigger than that. So that realization needs to hit as well. And I feel a lot of NGOs have to be careful with the language that they adopt so that people who naturally would, you know, sort of resist something coming from a culture wars, should I say, point of view, or which could be interpreted as a culture wars point of view, will listen to what is going on and also join in the action. We need everyone on board for this.
Exactly. I believe that what Kataza just said is just what we need to be careful with. And but also, we also need to take the whole situation as a whole. If we look at the mass killings alone, then again, we might also miss the real issue. But there are issues of the blasphemy laws, which have no place in our constitution in Nigeria, but have been allowed to operate freely in most of the northern states, especially the 12 Sharia states. Those are the northern states that have declared Sharia and using their Sharia police, that, like the Hizba, who are arbitrarily enforcing the Sharia law, even on non-Muslims. Again, these are some of the issues we need to address. We need to address, take holistically the issue of the discrimination I spoke about, because it's still ongoing, the issues of the marginalization. Because, like you know, in conflict resolution, these are some of the things that will cause anger and frustration, and which usually will lead to violence, as we do know. So unless we take this discussion holistically and not just talk about one thing that is happening, then when we think we have finished solving one, the others will rear their head and then we'll go back to ground zero.
I agree. And I think that's what was so quite unhelpful about Bill Mayer's intervention, because he took, for number one, he added to the culture wars issue by trying to sort of lessen the behavior or the impact of Israeli behavior in Gaza, which has been ruled genocide internationally, and then use Nigeria as a vehicle for doing that. That does not help, because Nigeria needs help, and Nigeria also needs an international investigation, independent investigation by competent authorities and competent officials who can look into the violence, not just initially, if we're going to talk about determination of genocide, initially in the Middle Belt, but also, you know, broader, and come up with, sort of like a ruling and solutions and actions. We need the same international investigation that Gaza had, but we don't have to diminish one scenario in order to promote another, especially when you're doing it in a weaponizing way. It's not helpful for Nigeria. And Nigeria has always been a country of contention in this arena, which is why I think so little has been done to assist it, because people have tried to weaponize it on the one hand and then diminish it on the other, and that has not been helpful. Those who are using it as a cultural vehicle are not doing a favor or a service to the Nigerian people. The Nigerian people are suffering and they need intervention now. And anything that is done that actually causes contention as opposed to, you know, concern, really is quite condemnable in my book.
It sounds as if, and I think this is pertinent, you know, in a wider kind of cultural way, isn't it? There are this culture war framing that actually then we can end up using conflicts or using cases to beat each other over the head to try and win points in a culture war, and that's just entirely inappropriate for what we're talking about, because as you said, there are real people who are experiencing real suffering who need real help, and that help needs to come in a serious and considered and an excellent way to actually bring, and systematic way to actually bring about change. To we're talking about very, very complex issues. You know, religion is a complex issue. Ethnicity is a complex issue. There aren't simple solutions. There are creative solutions. There aren't simple solutions. And so to use it in a cultural way is something that we need to be very careful of. How can we be more in tune, I suppose? I don't know if you have anything to suggest to us as kind of as Christians, as listeners, as interested parties. How can we be aware of that framing and push back against that framing when we see it?
Well, we have to just keep holding on to the fact that we are meant to be on the side of those who are suffering, regardless of who they are. You know, so this is why the Bill Meyer thing was problematic. Both sides are suffering, and we have to speak up for both of them. And we mustn't diminish. There's also a tendency, I think this is what lies behind quite a bit of Western reluctance to speak on Nigeria, and even behind, to a great extent, the removal of Nigeria from the CPC list the first time, and the delay to put it on there. I mean, they just sort of like tossed it on there in the November when Trump was about to leave. And so that gave good grounds to say, well, if you cared that much, if it was so bad, it would have been on the list earlier, so take it off. There is a tendency to be reluctant to speak on the suffering of Christians because of some kind of fear of promoting, you know, the colonization or whatever empire, a colonial guilt, should I put it that way. Don't be afraid to speak out on it when it's happening, when it's genuinely happening. But also be careful of the sources you quote when you're speaking out on it. Because if you come with something that is too is not well researched and sounds a little bit hysterical, people are looking for reasons not to help Christians in Nigeria. You know, so we have to be very careful how we approach this and not give those who seek to, you know, sideline this as an issue any ammunition. So just tread carefully, tread wisely, be measured in what you say, but don't be afraid to speak out also. And do not use it as something to beat people over the head with. You know, just speak the truth, you know, and God will come through, we pray.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's really helpful. I think it's that sort of, as well, taking a moment to consider your own intentions. You know, am I participating in that same frame, or yeah. have I really understood what's going on? Why am I speaking out about this? I think we need to speak out about it. We absolutely, so don't stop there. You know, if you realize, oh, maybe I'm doing it for the wrong reasons. Okay, move on to the right reasons, you know, move on to something different. But just that sort of level of awareness to recognize that that is a framework, that is a way of engaging with what's going on in Nigeria that is happening at the moment that we need to push back against and be very, very aware of.
Oh yeah, and the ask yourself why it's taken this long for something to cut, for you know it to rise to this level. It's because there's been such resistance. Mm. So we have to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. We have to be prayerful in our approach to how we move at this moment. We praise God that right now there is an opening and people are speaking in Nigeria. It's been shuffled to the top of the international to-do list almost, you know. So let us approach this with wisdom and not miss the moment and not abuse the moment, because lives are depending on this. So that would be all I could say, I think. Hopefully that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. I suppose perhaps drawing this conversation now to a close, thank you. We've gone to so many places. There's so much information, even around, and really we've barely scratched the surface of where we could have gone. I suppose there's two sort of final areas. We've touched a little bit on, you know, where do we need to be cautious and nuanced in our discussions. But is there one thing, maybe we can push it towards two things, if needs be, that people who are listening right now, just you would really want them to know?
Well, for me, it's for people to realize that the cry by the Christians in Nigeria is not out of sentiment, but it is rooted in facts and figures, and that we are not calling on the world to come and help Christians fight, as it were, physically, but to speak out for Nigeria and to speak out for the church and to speak out for people who, innocent people who are losing their lives on a daily basis, and also to urge the church to pray for the situation in Nigeria. That's like the song writer would say, so that these two shall come to pass.
I would add, pray without ceasing. Mm-hmm. And if you're in the US, please contact your representative in Congress and advocate for that CPC designation, because it will be helpful in bringing accountability to a situation that has enjoyed way too much impunity for way too long.
Absolutely. And I think that's really important to mention, and important to make a point of, that's not doing something, you know, that's actually very practical and very tangible. But what else can be done as well for those of us who aren't in the US to speak up, to engage and to see change?
Well, those of us who aren't in the US can do the same thing in terms of contacting our representatives and be informed, get informed, get credible information about what's going on in Nigeria. Raise it with your member of parliament or whoever represents you in wherever you are, and ask for your government to actually make interventions to encourage the Nigerian government to take action, to assist people, to particularly to bring all insecurity, regardless of its source, to an end, and in particular in the middle belt of Nigeria, where mass killings happen almost on a daily basis. You can just pick a day and you'll find some news somewhere in Nigeria. Fulani militia have massacred some people or killed them in their farms when they went out to work. You know, I mean, there's even a hunger gap now because people are too afraid to go to farms. So the situation is really quite bleak and people have been living with it for far too long and with trauma for far too long. And if somebody like me who doesn't live there can actually name people that I've met who have been killed, then you know this situation is serious. You can imagine how many people Yunusa has lost as friends and people he knows. So people are living with great trauma. So as well as raising the situation, please, as he said, pray. Pray for everybody who's there. Pray for the survivors and pray for justice.
Yes, I will also add that those who have the position to interact with our government should please, at least,
yes,
put people's lives first before political correctness. Because I believe that most of the governments of the world that have the opportunity to speak with our government are probably not putting enough pressure so that there can be action by our government to really stop what is happening. One thing I have said severally at many fora is the fact that if we are able to identify the sponsors, and why shouldn't we be able to? I don't think this is rocket science for the government to identify the sponsors of those who are perpetrating this evil in our country and prosecute them. Because if we start from there, then we would have been able to cut the problem from its root, to deal with the problem from its roots. Mm-hmm. So except the government is complicit, otherwise they should get serious about fishing out the sponsors, whether they be sponsors internationally or nationally, and begin to deal with those sets of people, and you will see that they will be able to reduce, the spate of killing and terrorist activities in Nigeria.
Yeah, I'd also add that internationally, if they are thinking that in terms of economics, what they gain from Nigeria economically, the economic advantages over the lives of people, they should remember that if Nigeria falls and only 10% of that population flees, it will impact the whole world. It'll impact the whole world. So it's better to deal, suspend your economic interests for now, because you will have none if that country falls, and help Nigeria to deal with this situation of this multifaceted terror groups that are there. Otherwise, everybody will feel the impact of what happened.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So there's some things for us to do. There's pray unceasingly. Let's be praying for the people of Nigeria. Let's be praying for the government. Let's be praying at all of those levels that we've mentioned about. And let's raise our voice. Let's speak to our governments. Let's speak to our representatives. And let's speak with informed voices, with nuanced voices, but with mm-hmm. with passionate voices as mm-hmm. well, that are standing up for what is right, and for voices that are there to try and amplify the voices of those who are suffering and hurting and being impacted by this. Not speaking on their behalf, but amplifying the voice that they actually have and that is crying out from Nigeria. Absolutely. So those are tangible things that we can take forward to stand in solidarity with the people of Nigeria to see change and transformation. Well, both, thank you so much for joining me for this sort of one-off emergency podcast. I'm hoping that listeners have, just as I have, found it enlightening, also challenging, and in really, really informative, and feel better equipped to go out into our lives, into the world, into the social media spaces that we inhabit, and be informed and to pray with real clarity going forward. So thank you so much for joining me. For our listeners, we'll be back next week continuing our series on North Korea. If you do have any questions, please do get in touch. You can find us on social media, on Facebook or on Instagram, and send us a question about this, and I'll be sure to pass it on to Dr. Kataza or Reverend Yunusa and come back to you with a response as and when that's possible. But please do get in contact, and please do continue to pray, and we will see you on the next episode. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to the CSW Free to Believe podcast. CSW is a Christian human rights organization advocating for freedom of religion or belief. As Christians, we stand with everyone facing injustice because of their religion or belief. Our work, including this podcast, exists because of the generosity of our supporters just like you. If you're interested in finding out more or making a donation, go to csw.org.uk.